The winners of the Goldman Environmental Prize each year are nothing if not courageous. Many risk their lives to protect endangered species, rare natural resources, and indigenous land rights. Lawyer and human rights advocate Alfred Brownell of Liberia is the 2019 Africa recipient for his work to save over 800,000 acres of Liberia's Upper Guinean rainforest from development into massive palm oil plantations. This rainforest and carbon sink is the largest in the region and nicknamed the lungs of West and North Africa. It's a biodiversity hotspot and home to many indigenous people. Attorney Brownell's conservation efforts nearly cost him his life as he battled Liberian government officials and the palm oil company Golden Verolium Liberia. And after he found a way to block the financing of the project, he was forced to flee with his family to the United States, where he is now serving as the distinguished scholar at Northeastern University School of Law in Boston. Alfred Brownell joins me now in the Living on Earth studios. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You've risked your life to protect this forest. Please tell us why you were willing to risk everything to guard it against the palm oil plantation folks.
What more of an honor it is to fight for this planet, to fight for this forest, to fight for a way of life of people who are preserving it. It's a life worth giving. If no one is prepared to lay their life down to fight to preserve Mother Nature, to protect this planet, to ensure that generations unborn will come and have a safe and healthy environment and clean water and soil that is not poisoned by agrochemicals and species in the Demiscene that are protected, that allow for generations unborn to perpetuate and continue yourself. If you are not able to give your life for that, then I don't know what cause you are able to stand up for. So I think I was always prepared to give that life. And even now I'm prepared to do that. The sort of threat we now face because of the way our forests and landscape are being destroyed, that is now warming our planet, that is now creating the sort of challenges that the world now faces. Drought, flood, forest fires, mass migration, poverty, and conflict. If the world and the planet is not worth the battle, if you are not able to stand up and allow yourself to be conquered and put your life on the line to fight for that, what else are you prepared to give your life up for? What is the meaning of your life? What is the meaning of your purpose on this planet?
Locally, in Liberia, why is the conservation of the Upper Guinean forest essential to the preservation of the local people who are there, the indigenous folks who are there, and their culture?
If you flew over Liberia, all you see is the vast expanse of forest. It's like you are flying over an ocean of trees, green and cover. It's actually one of the wonders of the world to just see a continuous span of trees going over. And all that one will feel and think is that these are just trees, and below them, these are just animals. But the forest is also the home to indigenous people. It represents their history, their culture, their tradition, their way of life. They refer to the forest as their supermarket. It's where they go and get the food. They refer to the forest as their pharmacy. It's where they go and harvest medicinal plants. They refer to the forest as a university. This is where they teach the young people about the way of the tribes and the culture, how to become farmers and sustainable farmers, how to develop indigenous business enterprises. So over the years, they've learned how to coexist their livelihood with nature in a very sustainable way. That's why this forest is important. But much more than that, this is the last refuge of what West Africa once used to look like. If you went back into times in West Africa, it was completely green across the entire region. Completely green. It was completely blanketed in green forests. The only portion of that blanket of forest in that entire region is what we now have in Liberia. It's the only intact forest. In other countries, they are all fragmented. So that's why it's important to protect this forest. It's the largest carbon sink in all of North and West Africa.
So when you got concerned about this in a public way. What happened when you started speaking out against the Golden Rhoeleum Liberia Company? These are the folks that want to do palm oil plantations. And you used your training as an attorney to launch a legal advocacy campaign against that firm. What happened to you?
Well, of course they were not happy. I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar investment that has come. And the government of Liberia had signed away a massive amount of land. Think about that, 350,000 hectares of forest land. That's almost like 800,000 acres of land to this company. The government had not consulted the communities. The government had not even gone to do any kind of mapping of the land area. You know, it's how, you know, sometimes elite in many other countries, you know, don't have respect for locals who have lived around this land and just give this land to this company. And they went ahead and, you know, said, well, we have authority from your government and we're going to take the land. And so they evict folks and clear away the land. And so when my attention was drawn to what was happening and I went and I saw what has happened, I was shocked because I had seen entire towns and villages completely bulldozed by these companies. I have seen streams and creeks poisoned. I have seen people's shrines, religious sites, their gods, desecrated. I have seen people's burial grounds of their great warriors, their tribal chiefs, those who established their towns and villages. And like in the U.S., it's like talking about someone going in and desecrating the graves of, what's the first president?
George Washington.
George Washington. And I'm wondering what the Americans will say about that. Or it's like to the African-American, someone going and trying to desecrate the grave of Martin Luther King. What would they say about that? This is what these companies were doing to those people. Their entire history, their entire value, their way of life, their culture, their very essence, what made them indigenous people, was under threat and attacked by these palm companies.
So what did you do?
So I had to act. So the first thing we did was, well, we felt maybe this was being done out of ignorance. Maybe there wasn't awareness. The government didn't know about this. So at their local levels in their regions, we informed the local authorities, government officials. We moved them to the cities. We went from ministries and agencies of the government to complain. We organized massive press conferences to draw attention. No one cared. They were in deal with the companies and was taking care of the destruction.
So we're talking about the motivation of money here.
Absolutely. This was not a venture that was intended to fail. It was too big to fail. This was intended to transform Liberia into a desert of oil palm. So we had to find a way to organize. The plan was to challenge just the grant of the rights on the basis that the government of Liberia had no authority to give leasehold right to a transnational corporation on land that indigenous people had existed on and occupied even before the existence of Liberia.
But how do you stop that? I mean, if the government is going to rule on any complaint that you bring forward, they're in charge of this process.
Absolutely. Given how the government was involved in this process, and given that they ignored all of the pleas that we made, we felt that if we had gone to court, we probably wouldn't have prevailed.
So what's the answer?
And then a friend of mine said, well, you know, Gordon Verodum is a member of an international consortium called the Round Table on Sustainable Palm Oil, which is a certification body to ensure that palm companies will engage in the sustainable production and marketing of oil palm.
So your strategy is this palm oil company needs to certify their palm oil as sustainable because there are great concerns about this from Indonesia to West Africa. And so you went to this certification agency to tell them, this ain't sustainable.
But certification is not just about a label that we give to them. You have to understand what that label means to the companies that are involved in the production.
Okay, what does it mean?
Because given what has happened in Southeast Asia, given the alarming nature of how palm oil companies have operated in Indonesia and Malaysia, and the impact on the forest and the species in orangutan is creating alarm, it's creating concern among activists, environmentalists, and social activists, and among consumers, and the demand for more sustainability. So it meant that many palm companies were not even having the financing to engage in production and to engage in the marketing. So they needed this label to show to the banks, to investors, to shareholders, to their suppliers, to the consumers, that indeed they can get the financing to do this. And so we filed a complaint. We actually said we are open to an independent assessment and verification of the allegations we made. And they took the bait.
Ooh. So yes. They came and investigated.
Of course.
So and they found?
And they found that we were right. Every single bit. This is very important for our audience to understand what this is. Because sometimes many folks will pitch this as development. How come poor villagers living in misery and poverty will have concerns about a multi-billion dollar investment coming to their communities? Why are they opposing that? Don't they want a better way of life? But what many people don't understand is how this occurs on the ground. So imagine Golden Verheerden, for example, a multi-billion dollar, the second largest palm operation in the world, going to poor villages. These villages, before the palm came, had their own palm. They had their indigenous palm. They had their food crops. And the company wanted that. So the woman, for example, had planted oranges that they would sell every year during the harvest. An orange tree will produce anywhere from between 8 to 12 bags of oranges. A bag of orange will sell for $10. So if a lady was able to harvest a tree of oranges and had 12 bags, it meant that she had $120 in her pocket. She would have that to support she and her family and her kids. The oil palm companies came and they didn't want that. They took away that tree. And guess how much they paid this woman?
Nothing.
$20 per tree. Per tree. Not even the economic or market value. So what development is that that will further impoverize people who already, out of their bootstrap, have engaged into entrepreneurial activities? And so we had to act. And so when those were established, the round table of Sustainable Palm Oil wrote them and said, you have to stop further clearing, further development, and sit down and negotiate with these villagers.
We're speaking with attorney Alfred Brownell, the Goldman Environmental Prize winner from Africa, who saved West Africa's largest rainforest from palm oil development. In the middle of the fight, the palm oil company allegedly tried to have attorney Brownell killed.
They tried to assassinate me, the private securities. And this is very emotional.
Tell me this story. What happens? Talk to me about the day that you understood that the assassins were coming for you. What happened that day?
You really want to hear the story?
Yes, people should know.
It's very personal. But, as a defender, I also know that there are many others who were not lucky like me to be sitting down before you to tell this story. Many of my people, the communities I come from, as environmental and land rights defenders, have paid the ultimate price and bowed down and gone to see their ancestors, people like Berta and others, Kenzara Wiwa and others, who have died. And so in as much as this is very painful, I've actually made a commitment that I can be that voice to keep echoing on what this really is, the danger that defenders are facing. So as you will know, they were very angry. Now they have the stop order, and the round table on sustainable palm oil had instructed them to sit down and negotiate, develop a work plan, and obtain the consent of communities. So they figure out that, this certification body is based in Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur. We are in Liberia in remote villages. We can ignore what they said and continue to do this. So part of our job was to investigate their compliance with this order. So when they told them to stop, they did not stop. They continue to take the land. They build much more strong relationship with the government. They pressure the government to put more pressure on us. So that's where the threat started coming in, from the government to us. That's where we're being labeled as anti-country, anti-development, anti-investment. My very citizenship was being questioned that I was not a patriotic Liberian. How dare I challenge an investment that would build the infrastructure and generated revenue and created employment? But we kept reporting back to the certification body that Gordon Verhoeven was not following the order. And so they organized the first fact-finding mission ever done by the Round Tables of Snow Palm Oil to a country to ensure that one of its members was actually following their instructions. So when the team came to Liberia, we took them to a place called Tajuan in Sino County. It was in fact an area where, after the stop order was issued, Gordon Verhoeven had identified that they would build a mill. It was on a hill, which was referred to as Pala Hill. This was a shrine, a religious site of the global people in Sino-Tajuan, the indigenous people, who every year would go and pray and pay homage to their ancestors. It was so revered. It was so sacred. And this was where the company decided that they would make it the site for their mills. And so the locals decided to show this to the fact-finding mission. So we went in and we proved, we actually met the earth-moving equipment that were tearing down these shrines. And when I turned around, I looked at these community people. Some folks just dropped on the soil. People were just crying. They were just crying. They just couldn't believe that their religious site, their shrine, had been completely torn apart. So, unknowing to us while we were doing that inspection and assessment, Gordon Verhoeven and maybe some actors in the government had decided that, well, we had already gone too far. And that would have been the last day I was taking my breath. And so on our way back, as we came out of the operational area, we entered a town called Sonowo Town. We came across a group of men, and there was a massive roadblock. They had logs on the road. And then our cars were all surrounded by these men. And they were going around shouting, "Where's the lawyer? Where's this lawyer? We are looking for Brunel. Where's the lawyer?" They were looking. So they were searching for me. And one of the guys said, "Yes, Brunel." And then there was a shout from the crowd. They were so happy that they found their prey. And then, you know, they started threatening and trying to open the car doors, trying to puncture the tire, knocking the glass. These men were all dressed in the company uniform. They had the coats. They had the working tools from the company. And they started dancing. Well, today is the last day. They were happy. Then I noticed that some other folks were sharing alcohol. So folks started to drink. They started to beat drums. And then some folks started to put chalk. It turned into a war dance. In Liberia, they have the traditional war dance where the tribes would do.
You put chalk on your face.
Chalk on your face. And some of the leaders came to the car and said, "Well, you know, today is going to be your end. You're never going to stop this company anymore. You know, we are going to eat your heart. We're going to take off your heart and eat it." And then someone said, "In fact, my boss man is waiting for your skull. You know, he's going to turn into a mug. He's going to drink his palm wine from your skull." And they were just being taunted back and forth. They were dancing. And it was not easy. The colleagues who were in my car had all, like, given up. Some of the folks in the vehicle had already fainted. So I didn't know what to do. I just kept praying what would happen. And I was just waiting for my time. Then they said, "Well, let's get the chief." Now, this local chief was actually on the side of the company. We knew that he was one of the person who was being paid by the company. It meant that if he gave his order, it meant that that was the end for us. So they went and they brought the chief. And he reached to my vehicle and he knocked the windshield and said, "Roll down," and I rolled down. And the chief said, "Are you Mr. Brunel?" I said, "Yes, I am, sir." He looked at me and he said, "These people want to kill you, but I'm the chief. I know how this is going to happen." And he turned around and said, he told them, "I'm not going to let you kill this man. I'm not going to let you kill him. This blood must not waste on my land. This blood must not waste on my land.
If you want to kill him, take him to another town, but I am not going to allow you to kill him, and his blood will not be on my land. Then a young man who stood by him was very angry. Then he assaulted the chief and hit the chief. Then some of the young people from the village got angry that the chief had been assaulted. And then there was conflict. The chief said, oh, so you insulted me. Then I'm going to remove the roadblock and this is going to go. And, you know, they went and was fighting over the logs, trying to move that. And then we managed to flee the area. And we went to another village where we were stopping, a place called Buto, where we started the original campaign. And the company guys tried to chase out there, and the Buto people came and said, we're not going to allow you to touch our lawyer. We stayed there for like 5 days, protected by the indigenous people. Every night, they moved me from one hut to the other hut. In the night, people who don't know who they were would come with torchlight, asking questions, trying to locate me. But the tribes protected me throughout that time. And then they found a way to provide safety along the road back to the city. And we went. We came back to the city. We complained. We issued press statement. A couple of months later, my office strangely burglarized. I had electronic gadgets in my office. No one bothered to take them away. There were DVDs and phones, cell phones. I even had some money, some petty cash on my desk. No one took the money.
What did they steal?
Documents, financial records. Then I started observing strange vehicles following me. And then 5 years of bank records from my organization was taken. There were stories written to the media saying that I was corrupt, that I was using donor money to create slush funds for myself. But I continued to persevere. And to be honest with you, I felt that it was worth the fight. It was worth the battle. And like I told you earlier on, that even if I faced that same attack again, I would go on. I'm embarrassed when I have to tell this story.
Why?
Because it makes me look like I'm weak.
Courage is weak?
But I feel that it's important for the world to hear it. Because like I said before, I'm lucky to live. But I want the rest of the world to know what this is about. That an ingredient that you wouldn't even notice if you walk into your supermarket or to your grocery store, or you bought a bottle of soap, or you bought Chewies, or you went into McDonald's and you bought your fast food, or you went to Kentucky Fry and took your fries and your chickens, or if you're someone who loves lipsticks, who knew we're buying lipsticks, or you who love ice creams, you have no idea that oil palm is all over you. It's all over you. And while you are enjoying this, both beautifying yourself and enjoying the flavor that it brings and the happiness and joy that it brings to you and your family on this side of the world, it was ruin and destructions on another side of the world. So while you are beautifying yourself as a lady, there were women who were being flogged, who were being stripped naked and thrown in prison. There were the history, there was the culture, there was the religion, there were the shrines of people who were being desecrated. This is what the palm oil was doing to that country.
So ultimately, of course, you felt that you had to leave, that it was just too much for your family and yourself, and you came to the United States. But I imagine that the Liberian government is still trying to pursue this deal, still trying to pursue palm oil development and other threats to the Upper Guinean forest. So now, from here in America, what kinds of legal or political strategies do you think could be used to protect the forest now from this development?
Well, so sometimes folks believe that they are threatening you. And maybe that's how the government of Liberia and the palm companies felt. When I left Liberia, they felt they had won a victory. We've now removed him and we can do business as usual. But I think now they realize it was the biggest mistake in their life.
Because?
It was here in the U.S. It was here at Northeastern University School of Law. When I came, Northeastern University offered me a refuge and gave me a platform, a desk to continue my work in dignity. That's the idea. When you go into exile, you lose everything. I left Liberia just in one suit the day my office was attacked by the police on a raid. I was not able to go back to my office, neither to my home. My family left in just the clothes they had on. I had to grab my kids. Friends have to help me to take my wife and my kid along with me all over the country and quickly fly me to a third country before I came to the U.S. But here in the U.S., in the Northeastern, I had a platform. I had a group of students who was involved in my research, who were supporting me with research. I had professors who were assisting me. I had an office. I had 24-hour electricity. I had 24-hour fast-speed internet.
So you can tell the story.
So I could sit down and tell the story. I could sit down and continue to put pressure on the certification body. It was here that when the company launched it, appealed against our complaint that they lost, because it put a lot of pressure on them. And so it was in August of 2018, a year and a half later, of sustained engagement, both supporting the communities directly in Liberia from my platform here in the U.S., using WhatsApp and other social media, working directly with the colleagues in my office, that were able to counter the appeal, and we won. And it is from here that we'll continue pursuing those cases to make sure that they are not going to take away that forest.
Alfred Brownell is the founder and lead campaigner of Green Advocates International and this year's recipient of the African part of the Goldman Environmental Prize. Professor Brownell, congratulations, and thanks for coming by.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.